What was August Bush like?
August Bush was very intimidating. He kind of scared people when he talked to you. In his younger days, he was really wild, and then he settled down. But if he asked you a question, if you didn't know the answer, you were better off to say, "August, I don't know, and I'll get back with you," because he knew the answer. And
was he a big man?
No.
So physically, he wasn't intimidating. It was his personality.
Well, he was smart. What happened in the 70s, when I told you about all the strikes, in the beer business, you want to run your breweries at 80, 90% capacity. Well, you can't produce enough beer in the summertime, so you got to build inventories in the spring. And Anheuser-Busch, on a national basis, was always running short of beer in the summertime, and Gussie Bush didn't want to spend the money to build breweries or add on the capacity of the ones they had. And Gussie, you know, he didn't like computers or anything else like that. So in the 70s, August did a coup with the board of directors and took over as president, and Gussie and August didn't talk to each other for about 2 or 3 years.
So Gussie was?
His father, August Jr., August Bush Jr. He was third generation. August started hiring people from the Wharton School of Business. Professor Acuff was the man that was really good at marketing and everything at the university, at Wharton School of Business, and they started with computers and, you know, and upgrading everything, and that really helped their business. He built the business, and he believed in a loud noise factor, is the way he used to put it, and the advertising money they spent increased, and they got it up to over $300 million a year on advertising.
You know, it's interesting because, as you've talked about, Budweiser languished and Coors was big, and we can just kind of assume today that Budweiser is the name, and it wasn't always the beer. It was because of very wise business decisions that August Bush made.
In the advertising and the Clydesdales, and when I got into the business in 68, of course, Coors was a regional brand from Kansas and Oklahoma to California, but its sales were strong in that part of the country. But the Bush family and the Coors family were close friends, and they go skiing together out in Colorado and everything, and we keep talking about this Coors brand, and they didn't really pay much attention to it in those days. It was more of just a regional brand. And prior to my getting into the business, when I worked for National Distillers, beer was more cyclical in Oklahoma. Like I'd said earlier, Slitz was the number one brand in the early 50s. And then also along came Falstaff for a year or two in the 50s, was the number one brand in Oklahoma. And then Anheuser-Busch introduced Busch Bavarian, and it was number one for a year. In the late 50s, Coors became number one, and it stayed number one till like 1977. The number one brand wasn't changing every 2 or 3 years.
You know, and this wasn't all on taste at all. I mean, beer is beer, let's face it, right? I know you would probably say, no, there's different tastes.
And there is a different taste.
Right, but that really wasn't what driving. It wasn't the promotion of it and all. That would be a bigger factor.
The advertising had a lot to do with it. Right. And Anheuser-Busch, they had taken the baseball. They sponsored 80% of the baseball teams. They sponsored 75-80% of the NFL teams, the NBA teams. They really got into the sports, which helped them. Two things that might interest you were, Coors always had OU sports, and Coors decided that they weren't going to sponsor OU football 1 year. So Barry Switzer picked up the phone and called St. Louis to speak to August Bush, and the secretary said, Who's this calling? She didn't know who Barry Switzer was. And he had to explain to the secretary who he was. And she said, well, August and Mike Rorty are out in California. I'll put you through to them. So Mike Rorty, who looked like Bob Hope, and when they had the national conventions, he entertained on the stage like Bob Hope, knew Barry Switzer. And he said, what can I do for you? And he said, well, I'd like for you to sponsor OU football. And he turned to August, and August said, okay, we'll do it. Well, a few days later, he got a call from Barry, and he said, Mike, would your son like to come down to OU and hang out on the sidelines for a couple OU football games? And Mike said, well, that's awful kind of you to ask. But he said, really, my son's tied up right now. Barry said, well, what's he doing? He said, well, right now my son's up in New York, and he's the bat boy for the Yankees.
So that's how Budweiser got to OU.
That's how it, and then they, you know, they, the coaches stopped drinking Coors and switched over to Bud and Bud Light. And up until the time we sold our company, when we had Oklahoma City and Norman, why, we furnished Bud Light after every game over at Bob Stoops' house for the coaches to analyze the game. One time, these young people came into St. Louis and got an appointment to see Mike Rorty, and said they had a new idea and they wanted to start this cable network, but they needed some seed money to really get it going. And if Anheuser-Busch would help them get this going, they'd give them the exclusivity beer advertising for the first 10 years that they're in business. And Mike said, well, how much money are we talking about? And they said, $5 million. And so August and Mike decided they'd buy $5 million worth of advertising for a 10-year exclusive on beer advertising on television. And these were the people that put together ESPN.
Oh. Yeah.
One other story is kind of interesting. Denny Long and Mike Rorty were in Ireland. That they were making Budweiser in Ireland with the same recipe as St. Louis. And they flew over there and they asked, you know, the people over there, what can we do to really get Budweiser off the ground with the people in Ireland? And these people said, well, what you need to do is sponsor the Irish Derby, and that would really help you, because you know, there was a lot of Guinness and everything being drunk over there. And today, Budweiser's the number one imported beer in Ireland. But they said, well, what's it going to cost to sponsor the Irish Derby? And they said, oh, at least $2 or $3 million a year. And they said, okay. They talked it over. We're going to do it because we want to make it a prominent brand in Ireland. So they're flying back to St. Louis, and Mike and Denny are looking at each other and telling them, who's going to tell August the commitment we just made?
Do we know how that went over? Did it, with
it
August?
It worked, and Bud's the number one.
But August. August.
Oh, yeah, he bought into it because they, like I said, he... His, you know, high noise level was advertising, and that's what made things happen.
So Budweiser became the major seller
in Ireland.
In Ireland,
yeah,
that's pretty great.